Hey there, thanks for pressing play on this AHDB podcast. So, bit of news. Food and Farming and Agonomics have officially been retired. No more episodes coming. But wait, before you wander off into the podcast wilderness, we've got something new, shiny and weekly. It's called The Ag Show. It's got all the good stuff. Farming chats, fresh insights and a whole load of fun. New episodes drop every Wednesday at midday. Just search The Ag Show wherever you get your podcasts to give it a whirl.
Okay, hot topic news. Did you guys see that apparently digestives or white chocolate digestives and white chocolate Kit Kats are no longer allowed to be called white chocolate? They are now just going to be referred to as white due to not containing the correct levels of cocoa butter or chocolate within them to be classed as chocolate.
I don't know how you come up with these, Charlotte, because I've got to say, I recently discovered, we're going to refer to it as a white Twix now. And if that means that I'm suddenly not shopping from the chocolate aisle, it's going to make my day because they are just next level. I'm not someone who fills up with fuel and grabs something, a little sweet treat normally, but there they are, my kryptonite, these. We'll call them white Twixes.
The white Twixes might be all right to be called chocolate. I haven't seen their chocolate levels. But yeah, Kit Kats and digestives, if you're going for the white version, you don't have to say that it's anything chocolatey anymore.
Fantastic.
Hello, welcome to Agonomics, your weekly fix of the economics of agriculture with
Charlotte Fox-Reese,
Tom Spencer,
and me, Hannah Clark. Back to full fitness at last.
And it's great to have you back, Hannah. And also great not to have to contend with any more earwigs since getting back from Groundswell.
On this week's show, I'm going to take you through my latest report on UK tractor registrations, which have fallen to their lowest level in over two decades.
Tom, despite that sharp drop, was there still a trend towards larger and more powerful machines last year?
Well, Hannah, you'll just have to wait and see.
You're such a tease.
Absolutely.
Well, you'll also have to wait for the answer to this week's big question about the importance of carcass balance.
A reminder, new episodes of Agonomics drop at midday on Wednesdays. So follow us wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you don't miss a show.
And get in touch. Email us at agonomics@ahdb.org.uk. So before we move on to the world of tractors in the UK, it's time for some news. Charlotte, what have you got for us today?
Well, we all know I'm such a fan of dairy. Do anything for a cheese sandwich. And I was reading on the AHDB website a report which Annabelle Twinborough has just popped out. So she's one of our analysts within our dairy team. And that was looking at what is the long-term global outlook for dairy consumption. So something that I'm pretty sure that we can all think is particularly important for our dairy farmers, because we all know that, yes, trade is particularly important for the UK. It's not just all about what our domestic consumers want, but also those wider markets too. And we do know that dairy is a key component of consumer diets. And we are anticipating, actually, that up to 2033, there is going to be an increase in demand for fresh dairy products. And this is going to be equivalent to an increase of about 11% per person. So, and we're seeing that demand is really being driven by developing regions. And that's because we've got things such as global wealth and population increasing. But also we are going to be seeing that the developed regions, so thinking areas such as the UK, are also going to be in growth just at a slightly slower rate. So really important, because we have seen lots in the news, haven't we, about different GLP-1 diet drugs increasing in demand, perhaps becoming more mainstream, which might be putting that little bit more challenge on some of our dairy products, really. But there are then still going to be opportunities coming through there. So your high protein, low fat products are going to be important. but also your different powders coming through. So whole milk powders and skim milk powders, really important for infant and elderly nutrition, and also having that alternative for the fresh dairy products. So if you want to read any more about what Annabelle's saying the future is going to be looking like for sort of the next almost 10 years for dairy demand, have a look on the AHDB website.
Thank you, Charlotte. That's really interesting. Sounds quite positive on the dairy front. Tom, what have you seen?
So I've been looking into the world of sheep this week, and a bit of an interesting story I've been reading in the Farmers Weekly. A young Welsh shearer has broken the record for the most ewes sheared in an 8-hour period. I looked at this and thought, that is astonishing. Check this, 663 ewes sheared, and absolutely smashed the record over there in Mid Wales. It used to be 539 ewes, so 663 ewes. I had to look into the stats for this one. So if we put that into how many ewes an hour, that's almost 83 ewes an hour. So 1.38 ewes a minute, which I've done a bit of, I say, helping out with shearing. And by that, I mean, I was folding some wool, which is normally what the newbie gets to do. And on a hot day, I can tell you, it is not the most fun job at all. Did a bit more reading around it, and each ewe on average, this sort of across all breeds, as I'm going to try and sort of explain what that might mean, 663, but about 4.5 kilos of wool is roughly what you might expect to be sheared off a sheep. That is equivalent to about 6 jumpers, which means that you're almost producing there 4,000 jumpers, 3,978 to be exact. I know that will take a bit longer to knit for your grandmas in your living rooms, but that is, if you ask me, that is astonishing. So well done to Hugh Jones from Mid Wales. I thought that was fantastic.
I mean, come on, Tom, that does sound incredible, but we all know you do love a bit of knitting too. Knitting is not just for grandmas in their living room, it's for anyone. But that does sound absolutely incredible. I can't imagine the heat that we've been having recently. Jeez, trying to do that back-breaking work and smashing a record. Incredible work.
Very impressive.
And speaking of breaking records, we've just released our first harvest report of the season, which covers the beginning of cutting up to the 9th of July. And it reveals that harvest this year has got off to the fastest start in at least the last 19 years because of the long dry spells we saw in the spring and the recent hot temperatures. So this is a first in the series of harvest progress reports that we produce as the season progresses. We produce it with data collected by the Anderson Centre, and it's based on a sample survey of farmers in Great Britain and Northern Ireland. So keep your eyes peeled for these reports as we go through the season. It will definitely be an interesting one to watch as we go forward. And I know you guys talked about harvest reports more recently, haven't you?
Yeah, we heard from Millie, didn't we, about what we were likely to expect. And even back then, we were seeing combines out in the sunshine. So it does not surprise me that we are having this data come through. But I wasn't expecting the earliest one in 19 years. That is quite extraordinary. Back home, we've just got the combine out, dusted her off, and we've had her out into the barley this weekend. Dad's also quite sort of gobsmacked at how early we are. We've got all the people, we're not really ready for it, really. We weren't expecting everyone to be going full-blown at this time of year, but it's very exciting and, yeah, good to get all guns blazing.
So that's it for our top news picks for this week. After a short break, we'll be back hearing the top headlines from Tom's latest report looking at tractor registrations.
Welcome back to Agonomics with Hannah, Tom and Charlotte. And for this next section, we're going to dive into the world of tractor registrations. Tom?
Yeah, so farmer confidence is quite a useful sentiment to understand of how much farmers want to invest in their business, how confident they are with the year ahead, and how agriculture in general around the UK is likely to look as investment drives growth in agriculture, as in with any industry. So having a look at these stats was something that I believed hopefully could lead us down a road to understanding what that might be. And having gone down that, I found some pretty interesting stats that came out of it.
So come on then, Tom, what are those top headlining stats that you think all of us should know?
Well, the big one that came out is total rolling registrations, so 12 months. So a 12-month rolling period, how many new tractors have been registered in the UK in the last 12 months. So you can record that every month. This is data that's recorded by the DVLA and compiled by the Agricultural Engineering Association, the AEA. And not only are they down 16% on the year, that's June 25's stat compared to June 24 stat, but it's actually the lowest figure since 1998, which is quite considerable. When we sort of look at that across what that might mean, it's generally farmers that potentially aren't as confident that the money that they are generating is best put into their new set of tractors. It's not necessarily that. There's lots of other reasons why this might be, but it's a general trend that we could be seeing moving forward.
And without trying to be too political, is this potentially a knock-on effect of some of the different policies that we might have seen coming into force that the Labour government have put in? So we'd seen that there was the inheritance tax bills that were being put in around farmers. Is that going to potentially have a knock-on effect?
There's a potential that it has. There's no way of actually linking this directly. As I say, this is a good way of sort of seeing general sentiment. It's obviously something that will affect different sectors of agriculture differently. So your arable and your livestock, for example, won't necessarily have the same trends, and then your dairy. And then it'll be different in different parts of the UK as well, as different weather patterns, for example, and the different economics of those sectors themselves. So last year's harvest, for example, if you've been keen, this is the money that would have been made by arable farmers, for example, in 2024, wasn't the best by any means, and that could have had a big effect. Keen watchers of Clarkson's Farm will only be able to quote me some of those stats that came out of such a poor harvest. That will definitely have had a knock-on effect. But it's not just those arable farms that are investing in their business. It is across the board that farmers do purchase tractors. And so it is really interesting to see where those have gone. So March is a particularly pivotal month for tractor registrations. So it's the end of the financial year. It's often where farmers choose to purchase their machines with sort of tax incentives to do so, with any profits that they've made throughout the year. And March of 2025 this year was down 24% compared to the year before, a staggering decrease. The other interesting thing is when we look at 2024's data as a whole, and it's actually the types of tractor that are being sold. And 2024 saw a significant move towards those larger tractors, so more horsepower. Always when we look at tractor registrations, it's got to be tractors that are above 50 horsepower, because there are lots of sort of vineyard style tractors that are often bought in their droves by one particular farm. So we take them out of the picture. But anything above 50 horsepower, the average increased from 173 horsepower to 179 horsepower on average for the average tractor sold. And the share of tractors being purchased at that top end significantly increased. So in 2022, it was just 9% of tractors above 240 horsepower. In 2023, that was 12% of tractors above 240 horsepower. And 2024, that was 15%. So a big increase. So this may not be something that's necessarily linked to farm confidence, but actually farms making use of higher horsepower tractors to do the job of potentially multiple tractors that were of a lower horsepower. Could be a sign of that.
So bigger might be better, is what you're bigger, actually saying, because it can do more things for you.
Potentially, yes. However, Charlotte, I will caveat that, as the stats that have come through go all the way to June of 2025. And in 2025, so the past 6 months, we've actually seen a flip of this. So actually, this has been the year where those larger tractors have been nowhere near the same purchase levels. In actual fact, the sales of tractors above 240 horsepower of the first 6 months of this year compared to first 6 months of 2024 have dropped a whopping 38%, which is just monumental, if you ask me. Just to put that into numbers, there were 887 sales of those 240 plus horsepower tractors in the first 6 months of 2024. So 887 down to 553. So a significant drop.
Don't know about you, Hannah, but I think if I was in the market for a tractor at the moment, I'd be looking for one that's got decent aircon.
Definitely on the aircon. I have spent numerous hours in a cab with no aircon and it is rough. So absolutely, you've got to stay cool when you're out in the field. It's interesting, Tom, you mentioned about regional data earlier. I wondered what differences you might have seen in registrations by region.
Yeah, so I've got stats for 2024 as a whole, and they actually show a bit of a different picture to what they've shown in the past 6 months of this year. So if we scroll back to 2024, there were some significant reductions across almost all regions. I think Northern Ireland and Scotland North are the only two regions that didn't reduce their tractor registrations. But for example, the Southwest were down 26% in registrations, which is huge for that area. They are the region that normally registers the largest amount of tractors, and they've actually dropped off that top spot in terms of yearly registrations. The East of England has overtaken them, but even the East of England was down 10%. Home counties down 24%, so some real regional changes there when it comes to that. Whereas when we look at 2025, the first 6 months, this is compared to the first 6 months, 2024, Southwest has actually remained pretty level, just down 0.9%, whereas there are some real reductions in some of the more northern regions. So Yorkshire and Humberside were down 40%, which is pretty substantial. And then the East Midlands down 30% as well. So there's some real changes in those regions. And it's notable that every region I've got here had a reduction in their tractor registrations for the first 6 months of the year. Again, some of these regions will be more heavily into, say, dairy and beef and lamb. And some of them, as I mentioned, East of England, are more likely to be your cereal registrations. So very interesting to see that it isn't just sector specific reductions when it comes to, for example, the cereals sector not performing as well as it has done in previous years recently. It is all regions that are being affected.
I guess part of it is reflective of what we're seeing in commodity markets and the price of outputs across the different sectors. So red meat, for example, particularly beef, is faring quite well in terms of price of output at the moment, whereas the arable sector, as you mentioned, is having a tougher time. You've got that broader economic backdrop and uncertainty from various policies and what that means for decisions on farm. It's really interesting to see how the decisions and, I guess, that confidence factor plays out in data sets just like this one.
Exactly, yeah. So going back to that Southwest, it could be that that being more of a livestock-based region, with the beef price being elevated above recent years, that they haven't dropped that much compared to previous years, despite potentially a confidence drop, and they've potentially been able to reinvest in their business. And yeah, you're very right when you compare that to other areas, that it is down to that commodity price. And when we look at what wheat is, I know I've read recently that the price of feed wheat's actually dropped to sort of, you know, £160 a ton, which is not what you want to be seeing as an arable farmer. It can make a real difference.
So, Tom, obviously, this report is looking at those new tractor registrations. But I mean, when you think about it, when we go out and buy our cars, how many of us actually go out and purchase a brand new car? More likely, we are also going to be seeing some secondhand sales going on in there. Do you have any insight around what might be going on in the secondhand market?
Yeah, I've been reading an article just this week from the Farmers Weekly that mentioned they'd been speaking to some secondhand machinery dealerships, and they are saying that secondhand machinery is selling quite well. Now, obviously, I don't have any specific stats to back that up, but it is quite interesting to see that it could be that farmers are moving away from potentially purchasing a brand new vehicle or, to that secondhand market, which again reflects that decision-making process from the farmer as to where their money is best spent. It's always important to mention the concept of depreciation, the sort of resale value as well, when you're making that decision of purchasing your tractor, and how that can affect your bottom line, affect your balance sheet when it comes to it. Some farmers like to if they're sort of a substantial business, like to sort of rotate their tractors, and they have a specific age that they think, this is the amount that I want my depreciation to hit before I want to sell that tractor and buy a newer one, whether that be secondhand or new. And it may be that sort of length of time that they hold that tractor has been extended potentially to sort of cut costs in the short term, even if the balance sheet in the long term and the efficiency of that vehicle, potentially it breaks down a bit more, but they're willing to sort of take that risk given the economic climate. And I think it's, very interesting to see.
And some chat that we've been having in the office was actually around farming practices have been changing. So perhaps the way that people might have been using their tractors may be different to what they'd been doing 5, 10, 15 years ago. So what sort of impact do you think that might have had on the types of tractors which are being purchased?
That does lend itself to that stat I brought up about the record average horsepower purchased, and that farmers are potentially moving towards one vehicle that can do it all rather than two tractors that can do it. That could also be contributed by labour choices and how much labour they've got on farm. If one larger tractor can do the job of two, it can become more efficient when you're looking at how much labour you have to employ to do that. But it was interesting to see that in this last 6 months that average horsepower's come down again. So it may be that we're just seeing lots of different factors playing together, and whether it is a big impact, as we mentioned, of the beef sector performing slightly better economically than, say, the cereals side of things, which maybe might have brought that average horsepower down. But no, it is definitely a sign of the times as people are moving across the board, really, of slightly increasing their horsepower. And it goes down also to the development of tractors themselves and how you're able to get more horsepower out of the same machine at the sort of design process of these tractors, which allows a higher horsepower tractor to become slightly more affordable.
That's fascinating, Tom. I wonder if the Agricultural Engineers Association did a test like Clarkson did on how fast the drawbars can be lowered on the back of a tractor.
I think that might cause quite a stir amongst a lot of dealerships, I wonder.
And let's not even get into the debate on which colour your tractor should be.
We can leave that for another week, I'm sure.
Right, I think it's time for a break now, so we'll see in a bit.
Welcome back to the Agronomics Podcast with me, Charlotte, Tom and Hannah. And now we're at the point in the show where we're asking that burning question which you've always wanted to know. Producer Martin, what is it this week?
It is, what is carcass balance and why should I care? Any takers?
No, thank you. Okay, we'll speak to you next week.
I can take this one. That is a great question, and it's a phrase that we probably use quite a lot. And unless you're in the biz, you might not know exactly what it means. It can mean a few different things, I suppose, as well. But fundamentally, what carcass balance or the carcass value balance means for a processor is getting the required income from the mix of cuts and the mix of products that are harvested from a carcass. So it's all about balancing the costs of breaking that carcass down with the revenue that the processor can achieve from selling all those different cuts, ideally making a margin and a profit on each carcass. Carcass balance is crucial to the viability of a processing business.
When we talk about what the sort of domestic consumption's like, I'm assuming we relate that to carcass balance. We're thinking in the UK, from a beef animal, we like our steaks, our sirloins, roasting joints, mince. But what we don't necessarily consume here is your, for example, your shins or your tongue, the sort of offal part of the animal. When that sort of comes to lamb, you're talking chops and legs for the UK. But as you say, there's lots of parts of the animal that if you want to get that value out of them, that's where the export market comes into play. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. The old adage is if you can produce a lamb with six legs, that would be the ideal requirement for the UK market because we love a lamb leg. But you said you talked about export, and for the likes of Fifth Quarter, which is another kind of term that's used in the language of carcasses, Fifth Quarter refers to things like offal and hides, skins, trotters, feet, tails, all that kind of stuff that isn't meat. Export is a hugely, hugely valuable channel for that kind of product. So offal export is really important for the pork sector. We ship a lot of our offal into China because they love it over there. The domestic consumer in the UK doesn't eat it like they do. So yeah, export is really important. Carcass balance is affected by demand for each component of the carcass or the cut. Now, while there is an embedded preference in the UK for lamb legs, for example, beef mince, steaks, less so for Fifth Quarter offals, four quarters as well, the demand patterns can be affected by other things. So seasonality is massive. Roasting joints at Christmas, for example, burgers.
Or Easter.
Or Easter, indeed. Your more barbecue type items are more preferred in the summer, which is kind of more predictable. But that has a massive effect on the balance of the carcass throughout the year. You've also got factors that are less predictable. The weather. So you would maybe expect burgers to do well at summer, but if it rains, then that's another challenge because that changes that demand pattern. It changes the demand for cuts across the carcass and it changes the balance. Things like price and consumers being sensitive to price. I know we're doing some work on that for the beef section at the moment and that what they call demand elasticity. So how resilient are consumers against price for buying into a certain category? That affects cuts as well, and that affects the balance. So it's a fascinating subject area, and it is affected by lots of different factors going on at the same time.
And that's why it's really important to look at consumer trends. We'd seen massive increases in people going out and buying mince through cost of living. You know, it was a really popular cut, and those more expensive cuts were perhaps being less popular. Well, actually, you don't want to turn your full cut into mince, do you? Because you are then going to be potentially devaluing that carcass. So it's all about how can we optimise what we are producing, and whether that's hitting that domestic demand or exporting into markets or into food service so that you are getting that best return on it. It doesn't necessarily mean that because you've produced a cow or a sheep that that whole animal is going to stay and go into retail. It could be that actually it's getting used elsewhere and that's how you can maximise your return on it.
That is a fascinating point, Charlotte. And meat processing is quite a unique beast in the world of manufacturing because you are starting with a whole product and trying to break it down into various components to then sell. If you're making a car, for example, or more traditional kind of manufacturing, you're building a product from component parts to then end up with a complete thing to then sell. So your meat processing, it's the opposite. You're starting with that full animal and there's so many products from that animal that the processor's challenge is then to find a market for all these various things. And it's staggering, really. So that's why carcass balance is so important. And that's why we harp on about it all the time. And that's why marketing is so important to help smooth that fluctuating demand profile and essentially ensure that processors and the whole supply chain gets that value passed back down.
Exactly, yeah. It's finding that market for the rest of the animal, smoothing that curve, as you said, affecting, yeah, the overall value return to the processor and ultimately the amount that comes back to the farmer. a critical part of our livestock supply chain that I do not envy as a job, as it seems to change daily, even when you look out the window and you see the hot weather we're having. How we predict that, I do not know.
Well, I think that is all we've probably got time for this week, guys. We've covered so much ground. We've talked about tractor registrations. We've talked about the earliest harvest in the last 19 years. We've talked about long-term dairy consumption trends, record sheep shearing, and we ended with discussion about carcass balance. So we've really gone around the houses, but what a fascinating episode.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Do remember to watch out for new episodes every Wednesday at midday.
Yeah, and please do get in touch with us if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss on the podcast, or a question you've always wanted to ask but you've been too scared to. We can try and answer it, or we can find one of our experts at HDB to answer it for you. If you want to get in touch with us, our email is agonomics@hdb.org.uk, and we'll see you next time.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.